This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Nation, welcome to episode number 2 of the Wrestling War Zone, a Monday Night Wars retrospective. I am JT here in the PTBN studios, and joining me, as always, my co-host on this show, that is Mr. Chad Campbell. Chad, how are you today?
Doing good. We're both hard at work today.
Yes, we are. I have like five computers or five different screens going right now. I got my phone, Freddy messages. I got this Mac computer to record us. Got my work laptop and the Greatest Royal Rumble all running at once. So I don't know what you got going on over there, but I'm guessing it's a similar setup.
Yeah, I'm at three. I've got the work computer idly standing by if need be. I've got the one I'm recording this on, and then I also have Greatest Royal Rumble on the Chromecast currently. So we're all good to go.
We are loaded up. We are epitome of a millennial in 2018. Lazy millennial.
Yeah.
All right, so here we are. Episode 1 was a lot of fun. Hopefully everyone heard that. If you haven't, go back and check it out. We introduced the concept of what we're going to be doing. And last week we talked about the 9/11/95 Nitro on Raw. And tonight, Chad, what do we have lined up?
Tonight we have our first pay-per-view, which is Fall Brawl 1995. This feels like an interesting show. This is kind of like a crossroads where... Sure, they hyped it on the first 2 weeks of Nitro, but it also feels like we had a lot of feuds that were built up on some of the, I guess, now B shows, WCW Saturday Night and Pro. So this is kind of a, I'd say a crossroads show where probably maybe this one and our next pay-per-view, which is In Your House 3, will be like that. But from there, I think we'll kind of be... mostly indebted in pay-per-views that are built based on the shows we're watching week to week. You know, the In Your House 3 is a special situation because of the them being off for the, U.S. Open, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so you're right. So this will definitely be kind of – it almost feels like that bridge show for us, right? So that, like you said, it's still – and even some of the content in it, too, feels that way. A little bit pre-Monday Night War. So it was an interesting show to check out in that it did come up so fast for us. Without a ton of build, but we do know some of the build. So this show did take place on September 17th, 95, from the Asheville Civic Center in Asheville, North Carolina. Looks like they had just maybe a little over 6,600 in attendance and a buy rate of 0.48. So I guess we'll be able to put those more in context as we move forward from show to show and company to company. Doesn't seem like a very robust crowd. I don't know what they were drawing overall at this point. And I don't know what Asheville holds. Is that, do you know if it's a pretty big venue or not?
I mean, that's probably capacity. I don't know if this is what became the Thomas Wolfe Center.
It's called the U.S. Cellular Center now, and they hold about 7,600. So they might have expanded, but it's close to a sellout.
Okay, and that did use, I'm looking now, it did used to be the Thomas Wolfe. So I've actually... have been in this auditorium. If it's I watched a Widespread Panic concert in this auditorium.
Were the acoustics as well?
Very good, very good. Much better than the Backstreet Boy concert I watch at the Duluth Gwinnett Center.
Anyway, Backstreet Boys just had me wispy for a minute there. But, all right, so So, all right, let's get into the show here tonight. Any initial, before we actually get into the matches, which you'll kind of walk us through, any initial, like, memories or thoughts before you got into the show? Like, had you watched it any time recently? Is it something that you remembered, you know, beyond just maybe the War Games match?
I hadn't watched it in a while. Did your Blockbuster have WCW home videos from around this time or no?
I don't know. I feel like I actually wasn't renting a ton at this point. Like, my main rental run was like 90 to maybe like 93, 94. Once the Coliseum videos kind of started to taper off a bit as far as coming out regularly, and I was getting all these pay-per-views because of my buddy Jim who had the black box.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Right. I didn't have to really go. Like, I have all these on tape, dubs from him. So I didn't really have to go rent them. So I saw this, I think, pretty soon after it occurred from him.
Because I know up to about, which is kind of weird, it's like up to when WCW got really popular, at like Super Brawl of 97 is almost when my Blockbuster would stop the tape rentals.
Right.
So for a while, and then they didn't start them. Like, they didn't have a block from like 91 to 93-ish. So I was still renting a lot at this time. I was, 9 years old at the time of this pay-per-view. So, yeah, I was renting a lot. So I did watch this one quite a bit as a kid. Like, there was a good many things watching it yesterday and today that I remembered, like, mm-hmm. I recollected from previous watches. But, yeah, it'd been a while since I'd watched the whole show. I mean, we're talking years and years.
Yeah, I probably watched it maybe... When the network came out, I started my trek through WCW, so I want to say I hit 95 probably like a year and a half ago, maybe, or so, maybe 2 years. So, yeah, I've watched it within the last few years, but probably not like as closely as I watched it tonight. So, all right, it'll be interesting to see what we think and how I diverge. I remember at the time watching this scramble, 100%, because I remember the opener, like, actually being really engaged in the match, even though I couldn't see what was going on, just based on, like, the commentary and then the way they were calling things. Which is, I feel like, just something that gets so lost in society, probably for people like that. I don't know how much you watched them, but I watched almost every WCW pay-per-view. If I wasn't at Jim's house on like in the summer or for like a long weekend or something, if they had one, I was usually watching a scramble in my bedroom. So I watched a majority from like 94 till almost the end scrambled.
Yeah, we actually didn't get like a pay-per-view capable box until 98. But, yeah, the ones that I didn't get in 98, 99, I was listening if I did get them. So that was, that's quite of an archaic-sounding thing now.
Well, it kind of became my Sunday. It kind of became my Sunday night thing. Like, all right, do pay-per-view, I'll save my homework. You know, I'd sit on my bed and just do some homework or whatever and then listen to the show while I did homework. Or in the summer, like, play outside right until it's going to start, come in and you know, listen to it. So it was kind of neat. Gave a little appointment TV for me twice a month at that point. All right. So, and I didn't have five screens, so it was one tube TV.
Right.
It was
just right.
Like, I could not multitask. I was literally just staring at a scrambled screen, maybe reading a magazine or something.
Yeah, probably had about a 13-inch TV at that time in my room, so it was not the most sophisticated setup.
All right. So our announcers for this evening were Tony Schiavone and Bobby Heenan, right straight up. Do we have a third man coming in now? No, they pretty much just did it all.
No, they did the whole show and then just Mean Gene in the back. So they did mention one time, I guess, Tanay was mm-hmm. on the hotline. But besides that, yeah, no Bischoff at all. No Mongo Baby. He wasn't on this one at all. So
do you think it's interesting that they kept Mongo like pretty much as a TV entity for Nitro? Like, do you think they were trying to keep him unique and keep Nitro as a unique flavor, and that's why they kind of had him there only?
It's an interesting choice, and, I mean, it's something that WCW does a lot because almost like the opposite end of that is what they end up doing with Dusty just being on pay-per-views.
Right.
You know, coming up where he's not on TV, but he's on the pay-per-views as the third guy in the booth. So it's kind of weird. It felt like they really shifted in their announcers a lot. Just sort of here and there, but I do like Tony and Bobby pretty much as a pairing, especially in some of the matches we had tonight. I thought they did a good job complimenting each other and enriching the matches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Bobby like actually I said, seemed like he cared.
He did. He seemed more here. I do wonder if there's a divide. It'll be interesting to watch going forward of how he works with Tony versus Eric. Tony maybe a little more familiar, and you don't get all the jabs that he, like we talked about last week, he wasn't a big fan of the anti-WWF stuff. I wonder if he just kind of was like didn't want to get into that shit with Eric, because he does seem more often on Nitro. He's a little more checked out than some of these shows, or he could have been drunk on Nitro, not here.
Right.
I guess we'll find out. But you make a good point about enriching the matches, because kind of going back to my anecdote about watching the show Scrambled in '95, I remember being real hooked on this opener because I mean they were really doing a great job calling it and putting over the exhaustion and the way it went. So kudos to them to hook me in.
So let's dive into this opener. We've kind of danced around it. It's Johnny B. Badd versus Brian Pillman, which, I mean, they didn't really, as far as I can tell, it doesn't seem like they had much build to this, except it was a number one contendership for the U.S. Championship. Did you have any more context than that?
I don't think so. I'm, like, racking my brain trying to think back to 95. I mean, maybe a little bit on Saturday Night they had built a bit, but, like, they weren't feuding or anything like that. I think they just chose them as two top contenders and said, okay, whoever wins this match will move on to a title shot.
Yeah, they pretty much came into this match as, you know, still faces. I mean, Flying Brian with his Nitro appearances was a face, and Johnny B. Badd too. So this, I think this is a pretty, I guess, infamous match if you know WCW's history. You had two guys going out there. Johnny B. Badd, not the most accomplished worker, certainly. I don't think he's as bad as sometimes he's portrayed.
Pun intended.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. That was pretty good. But no, I mean, I've never thought Badd or Mero was awful as a performer. I mean, when he started, he was really, really green, but he was put in there right out of the gate. So, you know, he was kind of thrown into the trenches really early on. And I think by this point in time, he was perfectly capable of having a very good match, as you can see here. I mean, he's certainly limited. I don't think he's ever going to be the best person in a promotion, but I'd like to compare him later on to somebody else that gets a much bigger push in later years and also has a much better rep, and it's not Cobra. It's also not Pittman.
When do you think Badd turned that corner? Because for a while he was even more limited, and then he started to piece it together. I always kind of pinpoint that 94 feud with DDP seemed to be like the breakout for both of them.
Yeah, I'd say his 94 stuff where he was having to be in somewhat an anchor of the under to mid card was a good turning point for him.
Yeah, the match with Regal, right, on one of the shows too, I think in 94. Anderson, he has a good one with Arn. Is that Starrcade?
Yeah, the one with Arn is good. I can't remember if it's Havoc or Starrcade, but yeah, that's one that I can certainly point to and say, yeah, that was a good match. And I mean, of course, he's in there with great workers, but he held his own too.
Yeah, I agree. Okay.
So, just a little bit of the, I guess, the seasoning of this match. So they do a kind of back and forth start. I thought Tony did his first good job of commentary on the night, talking about Pillman having a bit of an attitude and that his attitudes adjustment, that sort of set the seeds for what we'll see go on in this match as it progresses.
And I like, too, early on when he said, the stakes are so high, they're being tentative. Because early on, even with Pillman being aggressive, they're working a lot on the mat, and they're kind of taking their time.
Right.
And I thought Tony made a good point there, too, saying, hey, the stakes are high, guys. They're being tentative. You know, they're feeling each other out because they don't want to make a mistake early on. So I thought that was good work by Tony, too.
Yeah, definitely. So that sets the table. I would say it probably gets – I mean, we had some chin locks and stuff like that, but they progressed pretty quickly from that. They did some quick roll-ups for some flash pins that were nice to keep the crowd engaged, and the crowd did hang with them. And then we get a pretty significant tonal shift for the match where Flying Brian does a punch, starts taunting the crowd – and then he really becomes basically the heel. He does some underhanded tactics, really gets the fans to boo him. They actually start chanting Johnny B. Badd, right, or Johnny, right,
yep,
after that. So really strong work by Pillman to get the crowd totally against him. And now we know kind of the story for the rest of the match. One point, Pillman offers a handshake, which, you know, has the easy crowd response of the crowd saying, no, no, no. I thought Bobby made a good point there. It was a throwaway line, but he said, like, oh, you know, probably a year ago, Johnny B. Badd would have, like, took the handshake and probably gotten sucker punched or something.
Right, now
but
he knows.
He's progressed, yeah. I thought that was a smart line for him to say. And then they kind of go, I mean, from there, after a little bit of work with that, they go into sort of the finishing stretch of the first portion of the match with a lot of back and forth, both guys down. We get a couple of, ten counts that go up to nine before both guys recover. Bad suplexes Pillman to the outside, but in a judgment call, Nick Patrick doesn't call the DQ. And that's when Bad goes for a dive and gets drop-kicked right in the chin.
Yeah, that was nice.
Which looked nasty. Actually timed well. That's a move that typically is not timed very well, but it was here. Powerbomb by Bad gets the two, and then Pillman gets a tombstone. So they're really throwing out a lot of hefty moves. And then I guess my one critique of this match, and it kind of will go into my overall rating as we get to the conclusion, was I wasn't crazy about the final 2 minutes of the opening period when they go to the abdominal stretch and sort of the back and forth there. I would have liked a little more desperation.
Yeah.
In that stretch. It just seemed sort of out of place.
The final seconds were good, but yes.
Once from the tutti frutti punch, it was good. But up to that, there was a little bit of shakiness. I did have a minor critique of that. So Bad hits the tutti frutti, and then Brian comes back up and hits the springboard clothesline as time expires. I probably would have just had the tutti frutti like happen with 3 seconds left in the match or whatever.
Right.
And then the bell would ring at two, and then they would go into sudden death. So, this is a long match, so do you have any more you want to talk about the first portion of the match? And then we'll get into the sudden death.
Yeah, no, I think you covered most of it. I liked Pillman going heelish as it went on. Like, that was a nice touch. There was a spot in there where Pillman headbutts Bad to cut off a comeback, which I thought was really well done. He really cracked him. I loved the drop kick off the top. I thought Bad's plancha was pretty good. That's when the match really started to heat up. And then the final seconds, I thought before the draw, like we mentioned, were real good. And then we get to overtime with the tutti frutti fuck shit junk, as some may say. That was odd placement on that one.
I guess Nick Patrick has the power to go to a sudden death. And you don't see this very often where it's a sudden death. Pretty much, you know, there must be a winner type thing. I mean, I guess we had it in the Iron Man match at WrestleMania 12, which makes me wonder if they copped it from this finish, because this was, 6 months before. That's kind of interesting that they sort of did the same concept. That was a much shorter sudden death period, but just kind of the concept, because after that, I mean, with some of the TV title matches, I remember they'd say they'd be like 5 more minutes or something like that, but they usually had a time restraint, and then the time would expire on that, and then the match was just over.
It's funny, too, like, why not just have a no-time limit match if you're going to have a winner, you know? Like,
right, right.
If you're trying to name a contender.
There must be a winner.
Right, yeah, why even have it? But anyway.
So, with sudden death, they go to the outside, and now they're acting more desperate. Bad hits a top rope sunset flip for a really close near fall that most of the crowd bought on. Brian reversed a powerbomb for a Rana, which gets a nice two count. And then Brian climbs to the top rope, gets thrown from there to the guardrail in a nasty-looking spot where he bangs his chin up against the guardrail. That looked really gross and nasty, too. He took a lot of impact on that. It looks like Bad has it as he goes for another, I guess, what, the bad mood.
The bad mood, yeah.
He had so many fucking finishes.
Oh, he had the tutti frutti, the bad mood, the bad day. And then there might be one other one. The bad mood is the springboard leg drop, or the slingshot leg drop, right? Or is that the splash?
Right,
there was one he had like
splash,
a...
Splash.
Yeah, he had the splash, and then I think he had a leg drop. Or there was one he did off the top, I think. That might have been the bad day. I don't know. But he had a bunch of them, and then the tutti frutti was the punch. Yeah, he had a bunch.
Was he even doing the wild thing?
No. I don't think he did that until
I don't think so.
WWF. I don't think he ever did that. I'm not sure, actually, but I don't think he ever did the Shooting Star Press until he was the Wild Man.
Okay, so he goes for basically a slingshot splash. Brian gets his knees up.
That was great.
A huge tope for Brian to the outside, which looked nasty too, because he like flew to where there was that really thin piece of carpet on the concrete, so that could not have felt good. And then another awesome dive where Brian crotched himself on the ropes in a really organic way. And that's a spot that does not usually look good at all, or doesn't look organic at all. And he did good there. Quick sequence with a double dive, and a bag kind of falls on the top to get the pin. And earlier, Bobby had mentioned like the luckiest guy would be the winner of this match. And, you know, that kind of confirmed it with this finish where Bad just sort of fell on top of Brian, and that's why he got the pin. So I thought this was really good. I know most of the ratings for this kind of fall from the really good to absolutely great range. I'm kind of in the middle. I ended up going 3 3/4, a very high 3 3/4.
Mm-hmm.
Probably would have went 4 stars if it wasn't for a couple of ticky-tack things like the ab stretch that I mentioned earlier. The opening two took a little bit to get going, but I did really love this match because it just felt like a nice, refreshing kind of comfort food type match for me, that somebody that loves WCW, because there was not many camera cuts. You know, you had a kind of old school type feel with the commentary and everything, and you know, they were given a ton of time here. The final match was, what, like 29 minutes overall. So just an insanely amount of time for a match with no build. And are you familiar with the movie Ratatouille, Justin?
I am not. I know. Okay. I know what it is. I don't think I've ever seen it.
Well, the main slogan of Gusteau in Ratatouille is that anyone can cook. And kind of the thought process behind that is, you know, like it's such a sound science, a recipe that, you know, it'll be successful as long as you execute it well. And this match kind of proved to that, like that as long as you have a good storyline and two performers that are willing to give effort to go out there, that, you know, any long match can be successful.
Right.
So I thought this was a very good match and a really enjoyable way to start the show.
Yeah, I've always loved this one. And I agree with you, like when you look at it on paper, I mean, you know, everyone loves Pillman. Probably we're nearing the end of his best in-ring stuff. And Bad, again, a little bit unproven. So I think even at 3 3/4 is like phenomenal for them at this time in late 95 WCW. I loved overtime. I loved how they emptied the tank knowing, like, this is it now. We really got to get this done. I like the knees on the Bad Mood. And I really like the stakes in the overtime period. Like, they're hustling so much, just trying everything they can, emptying the tanks. And I even like the end, where Bad just kind of falls on Pillman after they collide. It's almost like they're both so exhausted. He's the one that the momentum happened to be on his back, and he happened to fall on top. Excuse me. So it kind of keeps them even. It's a great showing for both guys. And Bad just happened to be the one that fell on top of Pillman instead of the other way around. I don't think we actually proved who was better, which I liked about it. They're so evenly matched, they could not put each other away. And I think it's good because Pillman, I think in most of 95, wasn't doing a ton. Like, he had the stuff with Liger on the first Nitro. But other than that, I don't think he was doing a lot. So this was, you know, they're rebuilding him up for a heel turn, as we know. And you start to see it here. So I thought it was a good kind of reintroduction of what Pillman could do. And, like, trusting him to go out there and have a match like this with a guy like Bad. And I guess the question for you is, Chad, is this a hidden gem for us? Because I feel like it's pretty well regarded, but it is kind of buried on this random card. So what's your criteria for a hidden gem for us? I guess we knew about it, right? So it can't really be hidden for us.
Yeah, I would say no. Okay. I mean, certainly at the time, you got to think, like, if you were a U.S. wrestling fan like I was in 1995 that did not watch ECW, didn't, you know, at 9 years old, didn't know Japan and Mexico existed, you know, were wrestling. This was one of those matches where it was like, okay, I mean, you know, you have the ladder match from SummerSlam, the Michaels-Jarrett match from In Your House 2, and, you know, maybe like Shawn Diesel from WrestleMania 11, if you're really high on that, and Brett and Diesel from Royal Rumble. But besides that, it was like, well, you know, you might want to throw this up there as like a dark, you know, a dark horse match of the year candidate for what I was watching at the time. Like, it really felt like that. And I think, you know, like, I know listening to the live watch and rewatching it, like the Liger Pillman first Nitro match, I think that match is good, but
this is
certainly is like hyped too much in the time. Yeah. And I think this one like pretty much deserves the hype it's received over the years from the people that watched it. Cause I mean, it's a time investment, but it's a really strong match.
And I think Will and I watched it too on Dangerous Alliance. I think we did a live review of it and I remember him really liking it too. And I don't think he had ever seen it or didn't remember it anyway going into that. All right. So I won't call it a hidden gem because I think we knew, but it's easily the best match we've seen to date, at least so far. We got more to come. I'll be curious how you compare it to another one later. But yeah, I've always loved this match. I've always championed this match. And it's funny because it almost tricks me every time because, like you said, the first 2 minutes are slow. And I'm like, oh, man, this isn't as good as. Oh, yep, it is. You know, once it gets cooking, like it reminds you how good it is. But those first few minutes, I could see thinking, oh, have I overrated this as you're getting into it? And then it really starts to pick up. And Tony and Bobby were great, too. So, yeah, I really dug that match. It's a 3 3/4 to me as well.
Nice. And then we have Flair in the back. He gives a good promo, kind of talking about some past history, talking about the stakes for tonight. I just thought, like, during this whole show, as we get to Flair hearing his promo and when we get to his match, like, this still feels like peak Ric Flair.
Mm-hmm.
And we may be at the very end of it. I think we probably are. But, you know, like if you consider the peak, you know, he had a long peak. But if you consider his peak from like 84, 82, even 82 to now, I think that's fair. And I would still consider this in there. I mean,
I think it continues
up and down. But.
Yeah, and I think it continues. We'll see. I guess we'll track it. But in my mind, it was always kind of when the NWO came around.
Right.
Because even in early 96, he's got all the Savage stuff we'll get into. Like,
right, which is
great.
Yeah, it did good, too, on the business side. So
yeah, so and you know, he's good with all the Mongo stuff, as we'll see. So I think there's a lot of good flair in there still. And even, I mean, there's blips in 97, too, right, when he's doing, like, the shit with X-Pac and everything.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I still think, like...
Right, he has blips, like, but mean consistent,
I mean, like,
peak, yeah.
Yeah, peak. I mean, like, as far as being one of the most fascinating performers in U.S. wrestling.
So in my mind, that ends when he hurts his shoulder. Was that, like, summer of 96? So we'll see if it tracks that way. That's why I always kind of demarked his line of, okay, now he's later years Flair versus, like, peak Flair.
Okay. We'll see. I've always sort of earmarked, like, Starrcade 95. He probably could have hung it up, and I would have been complete with my experience. Everything else was sort of gravy, but that's something we can certainly track. Now we move on to Cobra versus.
By the way, just on his promo, I love when he yells, "I love him!" Like, you know, I mean, because he's admitting, like, he didn't really want to get to this point. You know what I mean? Like, it just is what it is. He's not.
I think that's an important point too for the match they wrestle later on.
Yep.
Which we'll get to. So yeah, keep that in mind that he does say that in the promo. So, you got to go with that as a context for the match they have later on.
Mm-hmm.
Now we get Cobra versus Sergeant Craig Pittman. So, you know, it was a short lived run for Pillman versus Bad is the best match we've watched.
That's it. That's why I said something coming later. I was curious what you thought. It starts with the Morse code. Ends with the Morse code.
Is that, I don't know, who is that, or the IRS typewriter music? The most annoying music.
Well, the IRS typewriter one's not real. That was just in the video game. He never actually had typewriter music. This is real. Cool. This is actual real music. The I guess it's Isaac Yankum's drill might be up there.
Yeah, Isaac Yankum's drill. That's a good one. Yeah. Oh, my God. It's so bad.
Like Pittman's. I do like Pittman's music, though. I really like the kind of the drum beat music that he had.
It's inspirational. Did you notice who Pittman sent out as his pledge here?
No. Who was it? Hard work.
Prince Iaukea.
Oh, was it?
Prince Iaukea. Yeah.
Jesus. I did like that entrance. I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess to go with the military motif, but he had like a huge sandbag or whatever that was next to him when he rappelled down. I don't know what the fuck that was. I mean, there's nothing to this match. So Pitman sends out Prince Ikea. He distracts Cobra. Pitman rappels down. It's a basic squash for Pitman.
Pitman looks like a maniac as he's doing it, too. He's fucking maniacal in there.
Yeah, this is like a 0.7 Sid squash level.
Yeah. Destroys him.
Yeah, locks on the code red and gets the win. I mean, I'm guessing you went dud here.
I went quarter star. I went quarter star. Well, because I like Pitman. I thought the entrance was cool, and I thought Pitman was a fucking animal in there. Like, so I enjoyed that. And Cobra's such a bum. I love it too because they, you know, Pitman was the heel. So I remember in the build up, Cobra was more of the, you know, he came in to battle the evil drill sergeant, and it looked like they were building him up to be a face. So I don't know what changed for them in that time that made them think Pitman had the better future and Cobra was useless, but something, because he just destroys him. It's not even close. I mean, Cobra has no shot.
No.
And it wasn't done like he Pearl Harbored him and he never had a shot. Like, it was just like Cobra just beat him down. It wasn't even like Pitman just beat him down. Like, you know, sometimes you attack a guy with a chair and he never gets a chance and you pin him. And it was not played up like that at all. I mean, it was played up like he was a bitch.
It was over. Like, Pitman was clearly superior whether he, you know, came from behind or not. It wouldn't have made much of a difference. So, yeah. So I went a quarter star, too.
There you go.
We're in agreement there. Now we get a clip of Paul Orndorff losing his shit backstage and Gary Spivey. Now, did y'all talk about him on Letters from Center Stage? Y'all had to, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we did. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just bizarre. I don't get it. I don't understand it.
Well, let's hit the theme music, which is the best part. We'll see him, I believe, on our next Nitro in his full regalia, so we'll get all that.
Oh, okay, beautiful. Oh, so this was a tease.
Yeah. Next, he's in the ring on the next Nitro, so.
Okay.
We'll talk about him there.
We can lead it there.
Yeah, but yeah, I believe there is definitely, I'll search it out, but there was a Letters Center Stage where Alan and I'm pretty sure we dove pretty deep into it.
Yeah, I don't know. There's just such a weird, like, he has such a weird infomercial / kind of like Southern Revival preacher, just kind of creepy vibe. I don't know. Something just seems a little off.
Well, I mean, he was real, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, he was a real, like, person, but, I mean, it's a gimmick. You know what I mean? Like, it's a real person that had a gimmick that
right.
was his career or whatever. That leads us to DDP versus Renegade. Oh, my God.
You're regretting this podcast already?
Well, now, see, this match is a PWO hidden gem, but one that I don't agree with them on.
Jeez.
As we'll get to. Yeah, well, I mean, it has worked, I guess, smartly, if you look at it, but... I can just say I did not like this. I think Renegade is so terrible. I mean, he comes out as a complete ripoff. He still has Jimmy Hart. DDP is in his full, like, pink sleazeball regalia. He still is starting, like, stuff's starting to come together, certainly, for DDP. But he's still pretty sleazy. He has the Diamond Doll and Max Muscle with him here.
Yeah.
Renegade gets a hot start sending DDP to the floor. DDP takes over, and you get clips of the Diamond Doll having to give a 10 for him, looking sarcastically. I did like Max Muscle throwing up a 10. I thought that was fun. I thought the heat segment here, though, was nothing, because Renegade had no charisma. We'll get to that here and in the next match, but in both matches, like, the heat segment just made the crowd die because they couldn't get invested in the wrestler that the match wanted you to cheer for. I did think Bobby had a pretty good comment saying this was the longest Renegade had ever went. I mean, that was kind of like a backhanded insult, but also for the psychology of the match work. And then we have the finish where Max Muscle gets up on the apron, Jimmy Hart trips him, and then Renegade does a dive on Max Muscle, but as Renegade gets back into the ring, Muscle kind of hooks his foot, allowing for Diamond Page to Dallas to hit the Diamond Cutter, and he wins the TV title here. So this is essentially the end of the Renegade era in WCW. Pretty short-lived because he just beat Arn at Great American Bash. So that's that. I ended up going to Star, and I thought at the end, like, the Diamond Doll, her reaction to Dallas winning was really odd. Like, I didn't understand what they were going for. Like, Kimberly's not the best actress, and I didn't understand if she was, like, secretly happy or secretly upset. Like,
She's supposed to be, like, secretly upset, right? I thought that was a... Because I think by this point, she was already getting sick of him. Yeah.
I think so, but she was kind of smirking, like, oh, well, now that he has a championship, like, okay, he is proven to be something. I don't know.
Right.
It was very odd, and I don't think Bobby or Tony knew how to play it off either. Like, it was bad acting, and
bad
that didn't help matters. But, yeah, what did you think of this mess?
Renegade is so awful. I mean, obviously, very clear ripoff of the Warrior. I mean, we know that. The worst part about him is all the red and yellow finger paint all over him, like, because he was supposed to be associated with Hogan, you know what I mean? But, yeah. I mean, it looks off. It looks like a kid in kindergarten who just, like, painted themselves. Like, with, I mean, it's literally just, like, red and yellow random stripes all over his face and arms. And it is, I mean, he can't wrestle. He's not very good. Like you said, there's no connection to the crowd, zero charisma. He's just out there basically looking like a backyard wrestler or a low, low-level indie guy just doing a Warrior cosplay gimmick. I mean, that's all it is. Like, when I tell you WCF had better characters than the Renegade, I guarantee you we had better characters than the Renegade. He is it's just terrible gimmick. And, you know, I'm glad we don't have to go back into 95 because his debut is one of the worst things they ever did with the whole where they tease that Warrior would be there and then this idiot schlub comes out. God rest his soul, of course. So Paige has come a long way. I thought, and this built his legitimacy, ugly bump when Renegade dives and Paige dodges him to Kareem's face first into the top rope. He's like, he didn't break his neck on that one. That was gross. And then I love how Max, is, like you said, he's kind of useless and he's a stiff, but it all kind of pays off here because he finally does something right and helps Paige win. So I thought that was pretty good payoff. But it's smart booking. I mean, Renegade's useless as fuck, and Paige deserved the belt. He needed it. He's really building up his legitimacy. They wanted to move him up the card, so I thought getting the belt back on him, because he was a former... Was he TV or was he US when they had that feud with Bad? That was TV, right?
Yeah, TV.
The 94 feud. Okay, so he gets his title back, and it, you know, I think it's good to re-legitimize him. So I liked the finish here, and I think Renegade sticks around for a while as like a jobber, but he's pretty much done as a kind of... pushable guy.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how much we see him on Nitro. I wouldn't think much.
I know. I think he's one of the guys that's in that well-known that fucking where they bring out the it's like June of 96, the Running of the Beach. It's like Alex Wright, the American Males. I thought it was him. Maybe it's Jim Powers. Maybe it's not him. But anyway, he's around for a bit. Yeah, it looks like in 96 he's there. 97 he's around Saturday night. Like, I don't think he leaves until the end of 98.
Wow. Yeah. So he ain't
out
for a
while. And then he dies
in
early 99. So I think he kills himself pretty much right after he leaves. So,
so sad ending. But, yeah, this was not a good match. So I didn't think so. I did not think this was a hidden gem. I mean, the psychology, I guess, was sound, but I did not think.
I mean, I went one star, so
was that good?
I'm with you.
Yeah. All right. We're in solidarity here against the PWO contrarians.
God, I mean, they're into that match. I mean, it was fine. Like Paige worked pretty hard, but
I need to see if I can't remember who it was that commented on it. I need to see if Matt D commented on it because this feels like a Matt D match.
Mm.
Shout out to him, but yeah, this feels like one of his matches. I mean, you know how it is. It's like if it's based in ground psychology, that's most of the battle,
right?
And it is for me. I mean, that's like the biggest detriment to a good or bad, quote unquote, good or bad match for me. But also got to have some investment from the crowd, which definitely has mattered more lately. Like I'd say in the past couple of years, crowd reactions become a bigger proponent for myself, whether I enjoy matches or not. And then also, I mean, I still didn't think like, I mean, I thought Renegade was awful in this match. And I thought DDP, like I said, he was starting to kind of put the pieces together. But I certainly wouldn't call him good to me with what he did here. I mean, he wasn't afraid to lock on the chin lock and do some other stuff that was not extremely interesting when he was on top in the match. So I don't know. I didn't see it.
I mean, do they look at it as like, I mean, do they like it as good, or they say like it's a great carry job by Paige or something? Because like I could maybe see that.
Yeah,
say it's actually good, yeah. I don't know.
I think it's more like surprisingly decent, but it is more like Paige. I mean, I think that's just sort of debunking one of those, like, let's debunk the narrative that when Diamond Dallas Page went against the NWO, he all of a sudden, you know, was good, like, overnight. It's kind of like a factor with The Miz, you know, nowadays, where it's all of a sudden in 2016, did he just become really good? Well, you know, people go back and look at some of his older stuff. And
you know me, I go back to 07, that Benoit match. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, from some of those errors and say, well, he had some of it figured out from pretty much the get-go. Mm-hmm. And I think that's more what it is there, where you can point
I'd point to the bad matches, you know. That's where I'd point. There's one, yeah. I think, is like maybe Halloween Havoc 94, where him and Bad have a really good one. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that, yeah. I would point to those certainly before this.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'd point this the other way to say maybe he wasn't quite as good as we thought.
this could be an image that, yeah, he just couldn't be thrown in with anybody and be expected to produce something decent to me, like this match, because it was not. But we'll see. He's the TV champion, so we'll see where he goes from here.
Yeah, no, I'm glad we're doing this the way we're doing it, because tracking him week to week is one of the guys that, like, it'll be real fun to see when the light really goes on for him.
Yeah, and he was, I mean, like, I hope it sticks out, but, mm-hmm. I mean, he was always one of my guys, like, pretty much like Goldberg and him are my two favorite faces from the NWO era. So
right. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely there's a tipping point in early 97, we'll get to that, is, like, the rocket launch, you know? Because in most of 96, he's actually kind of outside the NWO from what I remember. Like, he kind of exists off to the side, like that whole U.S. title thing they got going on and everything. It isn't until he crosses paths in early 97 where he really gets involved with all that. So I think that's where the rocket really takes off. But
so we will see. I think straight from there, I mean, we had like Tony and Bobby set it up a little bit, but we went straight to our tag match, didn't we?
Sadly, and it starts off with a bang when Bobby says, like them or not, they're not a bunch of thugs. Harlem Heat. I don't know if you can believe this, Tony, but these black guys aren't thugs. Oh, okay.
So, I don't know why. I mean, I sort of feel like I'm becoming like the voice of dissension for Booker T, but as I watch more of the 2000s stuff.
You hate Booker, yeah.
And now, as I watch now, he's just not endearing to me. But I actually kind of had some high hopes for this match, because I did sneak a peek at the Wikipedia match times for this one.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, you know, a long tag match. They might have been some good faces.
You should have been depressed when you saw that time.
I know. I was actually encouraged. As I told you, I started this last night and then woke up about 2 o'clock in the morning, about 4 minutes into Bunkhouse Buck's armbar that applies here. So,
I would have been happy if they gave this 16 minutes to Bad Pillman and let them go 45 versus this.
Would you rather listen to Cobra's entrance for 16 minutes or watch this match again?
I don't think I can watch this again. And it's funny, too, because at the time, I remember kind of like not minding the tag division. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. For some reason, like the three-way at Bash of the Beach, like I always remember like being fine. But God, when I've rewatched a lot of these, they have not held up to my memory at all. And I don't know if this is because WDF had a shit tag division in 95 that my memory of it was like, oh, well, they have teams and they have like similar look. Like it had an old school feel to it. Like, all right, they got the Nasties, Harlem Heat, the Blue Bloods, Slater and Butt. You know, like they all kind of have like defined teams that feuded with each other and they focused a lot on them like Saturday night. So I think my memory of it was, okay, well, they focused on the tag division in 95, and WWF didn't give a shit. But looking back, some of these matches are fucking long. I mean, unless it's a brawl with the Nasties, a lot of these are tough to get through.
Well, and as we talked about last week, like, with the WWF around this time, like, they only had one tag feud that was going. So if you weren't in that feud, there was nothing happening. Whereas, like you said here, you had like four or five teams that were kind of all around in the periphery that were interchangeable with each other and doing feuds with each other. So it feels like they have more depth for sure here.
Yeah.
Just because they are featuring more people. But, yeah, and really Slater, Dick Slater as a worker is somebody I've also always had a challenge with because mm-hmm. he has some, like, absolute great matches, but it just feels like for most of the time he's pretty dodgy as a performer.
And that's not
from what I've seen, like,
and that's not 1995 Dick Slater you're talking about. I mean, this is like 80s Dick Slater. Right?
Yeah, that's like mid-80s. So by this point, it was even less consistent with that. Yeah, I mean, like, to me, the best match Dick Slater has is a match with Jumbo Tsuruta in 1980. So we're 15 years removed from his peak performance. I mean, this match, I don't know what – there's not much to say. Like, it took forever to get going. That was a big problem. Like, the opening 5-6 minutes were just a bunch of back and forth where nobody had the advantage. And even still, like, there just wasn't – nobody was able to get the advantage or do anything interesting. We finally get a face in peril sequence on Booker T. But then nothing happens. There's just a bunch of chin locks and arm bars, a lack of tags, a lack of, like, hope spots and anything like that. I thought the best part of all this was Booker T missing a dive and then Slater hitting a belly to back, which, you know, that's not very exciting at all. Book gets a press, a straight, like, press slam on Booker T, and it looked like he had no cooperation at all on that. So I don't know what was going on there. And then I didn't think Booker T did. Here I go beating on Booker T. Is I don't think he did a great job at all, again, drawing sympathy from the crowd.
Right.
It wasn't quite as bad.
Were they the faces? I don't even know. I guess, were they supposed to be?
I mean, in this match, they certainly were presented as the faces.
So, but I don't think they had been. So, like, part of me can't bang them too bad, because if they've been built as heels, and they're not thugs, but no, I mean, to get the crowd behind them after a long stretch as heels, and the other team really doesn't have much heat behind them, like, I have a hard time pinning too much of it on him, given the talent in the ring at this point.
Maybe. It's just, even, like, I'm not asking for him to be, like, slapping the mat, wanting the fans to chant. But, you know, like, reach out to try to tag Stevie. Or, do something that doesn't necessarily say, I'm a happy-go-lucky babyface. And here is where I want to hypothesize something.
Okay, hypothesize away.
You know. And this will be great because, they're all alike. So it's comparing two black wrestlers together. We saw Johnny B. Badd in the opening. Now, Pillman was really good in that match. Great. But as we talked about, we thought Badd held his own. And he got a really good reaction, too, from the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me start to think about, like, their career plights. And, like, how many more chances Booker T got after this than somebody like Johnny B. Badd. And up to this point, you know, I would say, I'm not sure, you know, I would say Badd's probably better. And even, you know, maybe in 98 when Booker T is working with better competition, like as we'll go through later on down the road, when he starts getting into like the stuff with Benoit and the Rick Martel series, stuff like that, that should certainly help. But it just feels like, you know, like, I mean, somebody like Johnny B. Badd, who's kind of lost in wrestling history, who I thought he had enough charisma. I mean, his stuff with Sable, where he's a complete dickhead, like, that's great. I think that'll hold up when we go watch it, like the match at Over the Edge 98 or whatever. Like, I think that's fabulous.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, I like him too. Like, I like Merrill a lot in the WWF, both as the Wild Man. I think he's kind of overlooked, and I think he's a big part of the bounce back for them. And again, this make a list, I guess, of all the shit we're going to track. But I think he's a big part of the bounce back from an in-ring point of view when they kind of bring in that refresh of talent in early 96. But he, you know, the thing that hurts him that Booker doesn't have is that bad knee injury, right? So that kind of killed his momentum in-ring. And he became more of a character. But even by late 98, like you're mentioning, like he was still really good, like really good overall. He was trying to get his work back a bit. His heel character developed. And I don't know what led to him doing the angle and then walking away. But with his persona and the way he had developed, like, he is certainly someone that could have had a role for a while in that company. And I think it was personal that he walked, but I'm with you. Like, I think Booker gets a lot more chances and, again, some of the talent he was in with. But, no, I think it's a pretty fair and interesting comparison to look at the two.
Yeah, because I looked him up age-wise, and, you know, Bad is only 19 – Mero's only 19 months older than Booker. So, you know, they're pretty close age-wise, too. Right. And it just – I mean, just because he did, like, I mean, Booker was still relevant, what, by 2007. So he had so much more of a longer career. So that was interesting here, and that was something that I thought, you know, as I rewatched the match today, that was much more interesting than the match itself. So,
and Mero was Mero's actually in town. I think it was today, or I know he was in Connecticut at a school. I think he was at Dr. G's daughter's school doing a speech. Scott told me. I met him in last night, and then he's here at the school. I think it's one my sister went to at the high school. He's doing a motivational speech today. So he's actually, I could have had him on the show. Could have talked about this match.
Let's talk about your career highlight. So the finish of the tag match is probably, I actually thought this was probably the only interesting thing that happened, where Sherry and Parker, you know, it's war games, so there's two rings. So there's not much going on in the actual ring with action. Then in the other ring, you have Sherry and Parker that are entering the ring from the opposite side. Sherry crawls on her knees over to Parker. I put that at, you know, I said what earlier, like it was a 0.7 on the Sid squash sale.
Yes.
I put this on a 0.8 Warrior 91 Rumble promo scale for Sherry with her seducing Parker. They end up kissing, you know, just a real sloppy kiss where Parker ends up getting lipstick all over himself. So while that happens, the Nasty Boys come out. Clonk. Who did they end up hitting? Was it Buck? I think it was Buck with his boot.
Yeah.
And then Harlem Heat pins them to win the title. So we have new champions. Overall, I did not like this match at all. I kind of ended up giving it just a star out of sympathy. But I thought this was a long, drawn-out, big waste of time as a match, and was really slow in plotting. Could probably be, I would say this will be, I mean, you know, to take squash matches out of the picture, like Cobra versus Pittman, this may be one of the, this or Mabel and Davey Boy or whatever we got coming up. It's going to be a close race.
There's some stuff coming up. But this was, plotting. Slater and Bucker's champs is random enough, but it's plotting, going through the motions, just so much time that doesn't help anyone. Like, when you look at the end of this match, who was helped by any of it? You know what I mean? Like, no one. It was nobody looked good. And Parker and Sherry kissing, it's funny because they have that whole angle where they were, you know, Parker's wooing her. And are you surprised they never brought his dick into the thing? Because, like, obviously he's well known for it, and they don't ever use that as a reason why Sherry's into him. Like, I mean, it seemed like it was tailor-made.
And I mean, it kind of was implied, too, that Sherry was, you know, with Harlem Heat, there was kind of something going on there.
Right.
So, you know, maybe she had affection for the well-endowed.
Right. I mean, that's...
If you go off the stereotype there, so...
The not thugs. So the end was fine. I mean, whatever. The Nasties are mad because Buck and Slater, did they beat them or cost them something? I don't even know the fucking backstory.
Yeah,
I didn't understand that either.
Yeah, we'll see with the Nitro going forward. But yeah, I didn't quite understand why the Nasties were hell-bent on... you know, a title change happening here.
I'm trying to look at who. So Slater and Buck beat Harlem Heat, who had beaten the Nasties. The Nasties Harlem Heat is the infamous negative, one of the negative title reigns, where it actually aired.
God.
You know, and then it was
taped
on May 3rd, but aired. So the Nasties beat Harlem Heat for the titles on May 21st at Slamboree, but on TV, Harlem Heat won them back on June 24th. It was actually taped May 3rd before the Nasties had even won the titles.
Jesus.
So it ended before it even began with the taping schedule. And then it happened again. Slater Buck won them on Saturday night from Harlem Heat. The Nasties were still champions when that was taped. So
I'm confused even just listening to
it. It's a mess.
What a mess. This, anyway. I mean, as we talked about, like, the beginning was the, you know, like, the opening match was the good portion of WCW. I think this mid-card kind of shows the shoddy portion of WCW. I mean, we'll get to the main event, but this didn't help stuff either because this, you know, like, not everything certainly was clicking. As, yeah, they gave them a lot of time, but this match was just really slow and not very interesting at all.
It was boring. I think our conversation was about 35 times more interesting than this
match.
It was a tough one to get to. I get through. I was like, I was faded big time.
Yeah.
If Jeff had to learn wrestling by watching this match, he would have quit.
Learn something else. Chess, I guess.
Oh, he knows chess.
Yeah, I know he's into it.
I'd have to learn chess from him.
All right, so then we get the we get something a little better. The Flair versus Arn video package.
Well, actually, hang on. Before that, we go to the aisle. Or is the aisle after that? I think it's right after the match, right? Where Buck is ripping, shitting on Parker.
Yes, that's right. We do have some dissension in the Colonel's stable here. Buck was sort of like, you know, you left us high and dry there. And we did have a little bit. I thought that was decent work by Harlem Heat, you know, kind of wondering what Sherry was doing, and she was like, oh, that was part of my plan, but probably not really. You know, Bobby gives a line of like saying, I don't believe her. I mean, that was okay. I mean, that by far got the best reaction of the whole match was them kissing.
Oh, for sure. I mean, so, they invested a lot of time in that story too, because he was wooing her for a while before she finally, she get hit in the head and then give in or something. I forget what the whole fucking thing is. But.
Yeah, it was like the amnesia or whatever kind of, it's a mess, but yeah, so it looks like Buck was pretty
pissed off,
done with Parker. Yeah.
And then Parker's like, I run the show, you know, and then it's funny because he's like, we'll get our rematch, and it's like, dude, you just lost the titles. Like, a rematch doesn't guarantee you the titles again. You should be more upset. Like, oh, we'll get another shot. Like, okay, sorry, all right, we're good.
That's true. So now we go into the video package, correct, with Flair and Arn. Okay. And I thought this was really good. I thought the way they presented this, it showed a lot of history. We go to Tony and Bobby talking about kind of their history with these two. I thought that was really good to lead up to the match. And I think before the actual introductions, or right after the introductions, we get the clips of the wrestlers watching in the crowd,
yes,
which I thought was an excellent touch. I enjoyed that.
On multiple levels, right? It's a good touch because it's putting over the importance of the match and what it means, but also putting over why a certain someone is in the crowd. So it wasn't like forced or, you know, jammed in why he was there. They do a real nice job having it explained by having a bunch of wrestlers out there. But yes, it also explains the historical importance of the match.
Yes. Yeah, it was a multi-layered touch that worked because, yeah, I mean, it didn't feel goofy what happens at the end. And you had kind of an interesting collection of talent out there. I did like, I mean, Parker immediately, so, I mean, he couldn't have been too hell-bent about the loss because he's immediately out there to watch this match right after he lost the tag championships as stable with Big Bubba.
Well, he's going to get him a rematch. That's it. He doesn't care about anything else. We'll get
okay, so all is good. But yeah, so this is Ric Flair versus Arn Anderson. This is about their only, I mean, this is really the only signature match they have together as far as.
Have they ever fought otherwise? Like, I know they've
not
done.
Not that I know of.
We got tag next month, but.
Yeah, I know, like, kayfabe wise, no, but I don't even think legitimately. And that's why that kind of made me want to think, like, I don't know what a WWF, WWE lexicon equivalent of a match like this would even be, where, you know, two, like, really long-standing guys fought. Because, I mean, maybe, like,
DiBiase and Virgil.
Shawn, maybe DiBiase and DiBiase and Virgil is actually probably the closest.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, but it just feels like with WWF, like, you know, like they're either partners or they're in a blood feud, you know, immediately. Like there's no kind of middle ground of we're just going to have a match. Like they're either buddies or it's a blood feud. DiBiase Virgil is probably the actual, that's one I didn't think of. The one I was actually thinking of is maybe like Hogan Andre at WrestleMania 3, as goofy as that sounds. But I mean, like
it's up
they've
there.
Been presented as buds for a while and then had this feud. But you know, I think the critique of this match a lot of times is
Eddie Ray, maybe in WWF.
Eddie Ray in WWF. That's another good one from the
WrestleMania
Ruthless Aggression area that you don't think about. But yeah, that's a good one. But they'd had tag matches and stuff against each other, so it didn't feel, I guess, as novel, them in the ring. But yeah, now I know the critique of this match for some people is that it's not heated enough.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, as we talked about earlier in the promo, Flair said he loved them still, and I'll just say, like, I love this match. Every time I watch it, I keep thinking, like, you know, I don't know if I'm gonna like this as much as I seem to remember I do. And it always does. Like, there's something about this match that always, like, really sings with me. Like, both from the work and from the atmosphere. Like, I just love the opening with Arn getting the best of him until Flair gets kind of pissed off. And then just the way they take advantage of the openings that are presented of them with the punches. And, you know, Flair ducking and Arn going to the outside. And then he takes over the work of... the work of Arn on the arm of Flair is really well done. There's just, to me, there's so much built up and built up and built up, and it's just a classically worked match to where you eventually get to, like, the punches of Flair and the chops, and he's out there strutting and, you know, strutting around and, you know, slapping fans that are pretty torn. I mean, I thought the fans give a great reaction to both throughout this match. And then you get the figure four spot, which, I mean, it's the Flair figure four, but they still are, like, really into it, really buy it as the finish. Just great emotion. And I'd say beyond all this, you have Tony and Bobby's commentary, which I think really helped things here. Because Tony, even, you know, when Tony was completely checked out on everything else, he always loved Ric Flair and Arn Anderson. So he calls their matches probably better than any other competitors. And then you have Bobby, who has the unique investment that's true that, like, I mean, he managed both of these guys and was, you know, friends with both of these guys. So it's a interesting dynamic. They do a great job portraying that on commentary, talking about, you know, like, Tony at one point says, you know, you can't count out Flair based on how much punishment he's taken over the years and still kept fighting back. And then the call when Arn reverses the figure four and, like, Tony absolutely loses his shit, I thought that was great.
Yes.
Like, he like, loses it. It reminded me of at the end of the SummerSlam 89 main event. When Tony goes nuts, when Hogan and
he picked him up,
yeah, but this was like that where he just starts, like, going ballistic. But it is, it's awesome. And then you get the finish, which I thought was excellently done too, where Pillman jumps up on the apron, kind of randomly starts jawing at Flair, sucker punches him, Flair pops out, pops right back up, punches Pillman, and then turns around, and you get this, it looks kind of awkward, but he actually kicks him right in the temple, and Flair's bleeding a little bit, so it looks good. He kicks him right in the temple, right into an Arn DDT, and Arn picks up the big win. So, yeah, I know this was the match you were talking about, like, comparing to the opener, and I lean this one, and I think this match is, like, just great, 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 great stuff. So I know I'm probably higher on this match than most people, but I ended up going 4.25 on boy. I really thought it was a great match. Worked well. Everything psychologically made sense. It had stakes and just emotion. And there was just a lot conjured up for me. Like Flair coming out, I legitimately got chills. Like, I just felt like, you know, this felt like a big match. He felt like a star. It felt like two kind of buddies going at it that didn't want to, but it kind of come to this, and we'll see where it goes from here. But I was all in on this one.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's a huge match. The build was really good. And I like, you know, the pack. Arn's finally had enough of being the walk behind her, right? As Dusty accused him of being.
Right.
Finally trying to prove that he was behind Flair because he wanted to be, basically, not because he had to be. I like the good mat work. I like both trying to cheat wherever they can during the control segments, right? They're both trying to work in their shit. It was slow, but it was smart the way they did it, like you said. Everything made sense and built well. I like Tony's commentary too when he's basically saying Arn's trying to get the monkey off his back and prove to everyone that he's not just Flair's bitch. I mean, he's trying to show that he's his own man, and Tony really tells that wonderfully. Flair blocking the DDT, I like that. And the good battle of the figure four is really good too. Arn, I thought, was great selling the leg. Pillman coming in, I like that. And like I mentioned earlier, I love that they had him in the crowd for a reason. That explained why he's there. And it really caps off what's been a real big night for him as well. We'll talk about that. That was a real fun old school match. Pretty much perfect in execution. Major win for Arn. So I'm a little bit lower than you. I'm at 3.75 as well as like I had for the opener. I'd have this one closer to 4 than the opener was. So it's like borderline for me. So I'm probably a little bit low, and maybe it was just, I don't know, maybe watch it like too late at night or something. You know, somebody else, like, because it's not a match to me that gets you off the couch. It's like a nice, perfectly laid out, I don't call it mellow because the end isn't, but, so I think if me, I was like almost too relaxed watching it. I don't know, but, I really like it. I do. So Daddy Arn gets the big win, but, it was a real big win for him. It really was. I don't know how many people thought he'd win this going in. And Flair selfless as always. So
yeah, I mean, I didn't think Arn. I'd actually forgot like the finish of this,
yeah.
Which I don't know how, but I kind of thought like Pillman calls the DQ or something. I right. forgot like Arn actually gets the pin.
And I'm glad so he didn't, because it makes it more like if he came in and jumped Flair and he get DQ'd and they beat him down. Like this meant so much more that Arn wins. It's still a little cheap, but he wins. And it adds a lot of question as to what Pillman was doing there. So instead of him being straight up associated with Arn, you know, we'll find out eventually. But for right now, it leaves a lot of mystery on the evening, which I thought was good.
Right. And here's my final hot take. So a couple of nights ago, you watched the 91 SummerSlam for something that may be coming down the pipeline sooner or later to Place to Be Nation.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched Bret Hart versus Mr. Perfect.
Ooh,
from that show
this is hot.
A couple
Incoming.
Nights ago. And yeah, I preferred this match to that one.
So what do you
I
have that at? 4?
4, yeah. Okay. I know that's a very minority opinion.
Greg Phillips is probably enjoying his day watching Infinity War, and you just destroyed it. Pissed all over it.
that's who I'm shouting out to with this scorching hot take.
Well, let me tell you though, I did not. Some consider that like a 5-star match, that Bret Perfect. But I can tell you, I do not, and I'm going to tell you right now what I was at. I went 4.5. Went 4.5. But it was a lower end 4.5. Like I was actually debating 4.25 for that. So. I think 4 is probably a little low, but
yeah, that's always been a match I've liked more for, I guess, the moment than the work in it.
Do you like King of the Ring better?
Mm-hmm. I go 4.25 on that. Mm. Probably close to 4.5 on that one.
Yeah,
I've always liked King of the Ring better.
I might be more
like
4.75 on that one. Like I love that match. To me, is like just about perfect. No pun intended.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great match. But so there's my big controversial take from what's going on in the PTBN lexicon the past like week or so.
There you go. Take that, Greg Phillips.
Yeah, take that.
You and Iron Man can go fuck yourselves. that's my Infinity War spoiler. Iron Man beats the big man with 3 super kicks.
Oh, man. are we going to be the only 2 people that are not watching Infinity War this weekend?
Yeah, so it's funny because my wife's birthday is this weekend, and we're going to go out tonight, and she wanted to go see. So I think I'm going to tell the story on one of the 19 podcasts I did over the last week, but we want to see Super Troopers last weekend, and she wanted to really see the Amy Schumer movie, but I pushed for Super Troopers because I really wanted to see it, and it was good. I liked it, so... Tonight we rarely go to the movies. It's kind of become a running joke that I go to like one a year, and it's usually Star Wars. But she wanted to go again because my mother-in-law was going to take the kids, and it's her birthday. And so we're looking at the show times. She's like, "I'll see what time the movie's at." So I'm already resigned that we're going to see the Amy Schumer movie. And I pull it up, and there's like Infinity War like a million show times, right, for that, and then like three show times for Amy Schumer. Yeah. And I'm kind of like, oh, well, you know, this is, you know, and we're not like big superhero movie fans, like, so, like, whatever. But I always feel like going to the theater when like this big event is going on and you're going to the other movie, it feels like you're such a loser. Like, even though, you know, I'm not seeing the nerd one, you feel like a loser going in there because it's like everyone's talking about this movie. Everyone's fired up about it. Everyone's going to see it and ready to talk about it. And like, here I am going to see the Amy Schumer movie that's probably the same as the 19 other Amy Schumer movies. So, but as it turns out, my wife is now ill, so we're not going out at all. So I will not see either. So I actually feel better about not seeing either than I would if I went and not saw that.
Saw the, yeah, I mean, there's probably more people still seeing Black Panther than Amy. I mean, there's a good chance. Yeah, I'll never forget, like, my cousin used to take me and my brother to the movies once a year. He was older. He was about 13 years older than me. And I'll never forget, like, he was probably, like, a senior in high school or freshman in college. And I was six or whatever, and he took us to see Major League, the classic 1992 movie where a six-year-old ends up owning the Minnesota Twins. And I can't remember what other movie was out.
No, that was Little Big League, not Major League.
Oh, Little Big League, not Major League. Major League.
Yeah, as you're telling it, you're like, you explain. I'm like, I know Major League, buddy. This 1992 movie with a little kid. I'm like, that's not the Major League I saw.
Little Big League. It was Rookie of the Year with a Minnesota Twins owner.
Basically.
Little Big League. And I can't remember what the major movie was out of the time, but I do remember, like, he ran into some of his college friends and they were like, are you going to see this? He was like, no, I'm taking my cousin to see Little Big League. I felt so bad for her.
I saw that in the theater, too. It's a good movie.
I have it as I definitely think it's better than Rookie of the Year. Probably not better than Angels in the Outfield, but yeah.
I like it better than Rookie of the Year because it has real players and teams. Like, I liked that they actually got the
Daniel
licensing.
Stern as the
well, no, but even just like the players, don't they? They actually have like real players in there. Like, there's fake ones too, but. Like, because what's his name's in there? Fucking, isn't Gary Busey in that?
It's a mix of fake and like Corbin Burns. Is Corbin Burns who is the like
that's Major League now?
Oh my god!
Major League has Corbin Burnson.
But who is the guy that's like the cocky third baseman that doesn't want the kid to be the owner? He's in there, but I think it had a mix of like. Real players on the other team,
right? Yeah, like I think Griffey's in there, maybe Frank Thomas or something. Like this. So I always saw it felt a little bit more real. All right, so Little Big, welcome to the Place to Be podcast. Little Big League. Let's see. Busey was in that, right? Am I wrong?
I don't think Busey was in it. I think you're thinking of.
Rookie of the Year. Is he Rookie of the Year?
Yeah, he's in Rookie.
Old player. Okay, so I'm mixing those up too. Jonathan Silverman was in Little Big League. Billy Sullivan, Kevin Dunn was in this. I don't know who you're talking about for third baseman. That, like, I don't think it's anyone. I don't see anyone that we know.
Who the fuck?
Dennis Farina.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm looking at it. Nothing looks out. Where's Blackout? My boy Blackout that had the big gum wrapped around the huge thing of tobacco. I always loved that. Remember that?
Yeah. All right, so the real players in this thing were who? It was Kevin Elster was in it, and then Griffey, Lou Piniella, Mickey Tettleton, Pudge, Sandy Alomar, Carlos Baega, Eric Anthony, whoever that is, Alex Fernandez, Randy Johnson, Willie Joyner, Dave Magadan, Lenny Webster, Paul O'Neill, Rafael Palmeiro, Dean Palmer, Tim Raines, and Chris Berman.
Yeah, the guy I was talking about was Scott Peterson, who played Mike McGreevy. Okay. So he did nothing else besides
he killed
this,
his wife, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't know. All right. Back to the show. Yeah. What a mess.
Fall Brawl 95 is what you got. Breaking down kids' movies.
Well, I mean, yeah, all we got left is War Games, right? So,
well, no, first we get the footage from earlier where the giant crushes Hulk Hogan's Harley.
Oh, my God. These monster packages truck. Were awful. They were so awkward, too, because they just cut to Hulk getting his Harley demolished. And then it goes, like, straight, like, there's just, like, a jump cut right to the arena. It was very odd.
There, it takes a while for their production, which is funny because they're freaking Turner. So you think they'd have like pretty good production, but they're behind for a while. Their video packages are choppy and awkward for a long time. Like they use old graphics until like 98 still, you know, like the kind of the shaky, like cartoonish graphics and stuff. Like it takes a while before they actually kind of get down the production side.
Yeah, in some ways, I mean, in some ways, because I did like some of the packages, like the one for Flair and Orange. And as I talked earlier, I appreciated like not having different camera angles every 3 seconds, Kevin Dunn style, with the matches. But yeah, with some of the other stuff, like the acoustics in the ring and just right. like shiny graphics and stuff like that, yeah, they're definitely sluggish there. We get Gene Okerlund reading the rules for War Games.
Yes, indeed.
Very random there.
Gene Okerlund's rules for War Games. Watch it and then forget it. Because you're not gonna...
And then Buffer announces the new stipulation that if Hogan team win, he has to face the Taskmaster in the cage tonight.
Oh, God. So, why make it longer? Why not have him in the match?
But so why did Buffer? So Buffer did the ring introductions for Pillman versus Bad. I didn't mention this, but why? Like I didn't right. understand that. So he did the first match and then the main event. I don't understand why he did.
Maybe
the
they
first
figured
match.
Like opening the show, like do the let's get
opening the show yeah, with okay. a bang. I yeah. guess okay.
I mean they figured we're paying him.
Yeah, might as well roll him out there. Okay. Yeah. So I mean, it's a War Games match, so there's not a lot of play-by-play you can talk right. about besides, like, punch kick. Oh, let's talk about the steroid-juiced-up promo in the back.
Okay.
I feel like Hogan cycled up from Nitro to here because he looked bigger. He definitely looked bigger to me than in the Nitro, like, skinny Hogan.
You think he just, like, went to the gym right before the match and just, like,
I don't know.
Banged out a bunch of sets of, like, pump. Chest and arms?
Yeah. So this was very testosterone filled with Hogan, Savage, Sting, and Luger yelling. Some of the portions were good. I thought Savage was okay. Oh, and you had skinny Jimmy Hart in the background also in camo. I mean, some of this was okay, but the whole patriotic, like,
yeah.
I guess like that whole patriotic rah-rah camaraderie, you know, with the stuff like I mean, the match is named War Games. We get it, guys. But it just felt so weird because it's like, who do you think you're facing? Like,
well, Dungeon of Doom, they're from like Malaysia or whatever.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. You're facing a black dude from Mississippi that paints on his belly. I mean, what militia attack are we needing here against people?
Mingus, some kind of foreigner, right, in their minds.
I guess Shark, wasn't he announced from the Great White?
There you go.
Yeah. Nonsense. God almighty. It was just so odd. Oh, and did you, I don't think it was in this match, but it was in one of the earlier matches, like, Bobby broke kayfabe and said, like, I don't think Sullivan's going to be checking the Red Sox scores or standings or something like that. It's like, Jesus, Bobby.
He's from the Conk Republic, which is also, by the way, in America.
It's like, we know he's got this huge Boston accent, but, you know.
I always like how they would say the Conk Republic. Like, they made it sound like it was some far-off land. It was fucking, like, right. Key West or whatever.
Yeah. This obscure place.
So he's riding a paddle boat off the waters of Key West. Dangerously close to Cuba.
This whole thing is stupid. I mean, as you can tell, it's dancing around the actual match. I mean, there wasn't nothing there. I mean, I think this, to me, fully lived up to the hype of being one of the worst War Games matches.
And the only intrigue, like we talked about last episode, is Luger. I mean, that's it. Like, you look at these matches on paper, and it's a joke. Like, you could have given me Hogan against these four guys, and I would have still said Hogan's probably going
to
win.
Well, and, I mean, Hogan waits to be the last one to go in.
Right.
I mean, it's like, what a pussy. Like,
he is a
he's
pussy.
Waiting to the very last minute to go in.
He had to stay fresh for Sullivan. 5 minutes
ends
to Sullivan.
Ends up getting a camel clutch on Zodiac. There's your finish.
I wouldn't even call it a camel clutch. It was basically a seated chinlock. I mean, I'm not giving him camel clutch on that.
I don't think Hogan's ever done that move before or since.
Well, he practiced it just for this specific situation.
Just for that.
You had to force a submission. He needed it.
It was awful.
The whole thing was
real
bad.
It was just awful. I mean, War Games, to a degree, is kind of like a foolproof thing, but you just had like no heat here, no blood.
It's a joke.
Most of the heels, I thought, looked like bumbling idiots, you know, kind of.
They should have held off on like Flair and Arn fighting. Like, you know, they split up after Bash of the Beach and they do the thing with Vader. They should have held off like here and did it and just had Vader, Arn, Flair, and Sullivan or something, right? And then they split up after this and move it on. To me, that would have been a little bit more palatable. I mean, this is just no. I mean, so why even bother? It's like, why even try? I did think Sting looked pretty good, like him flying around and coming hard at sharks, slamming them. Zodiac was a mess. And never, ever has the heel War Games advantage ever been so needed. They should have let all four Dungeon of Doom guys start again and then one at a time. The faces come in. Savage, he flies in. He brings a lot of energy, too. And I did like Heenan breaking down how his Dungeon of Doom strategy would have went. Like, I thought that was one of the highlights of the match. He explained out the way he would have brought the guys in. I thought that was pretty good. Bobby tries Zasoff too to make it sound dangerous. Like, oh, here comes Kamala. He's at home in the cage. He's dangerous in the cage. It's like, no, he's done. Like, no one believes in Kamala anymore at this point. I thought Luger got a good pop and he shows the stripes. He goes right at the dungeon. But then of course he accidentally hits Savage and they start fighting. We finally get some drama. Like, this is the only drama we've had. And then Ming is like the only actual threat. So he comes in and it's like, all right, well maybe now someone that could actually beat one of these guys in the ring. And then Hogan, like, is that bad if he's going to come in last? He's fighting these scrubs. He's going to use fucking powder. So, and Bobby, Bobby's called a napalm because he's going to act
Bobby's
like 1976.
Like napalm. Yeah. I mean, he was definitely shitting this. You could tell.
He's like, oh, it smells. Oh, my God. What's, you know, he's doing his usual. What's that smell? Oh, is that napalm?
Way over the top. Kind of the hint, like. I think that's sort of like Bobby's bowling shoe ugly
right.
type commentary where, you know, like, I think this is shit. You should think this
is
shit.
He's going way over the top.
Yeah. Just going way over.
And then Hogan gets the Steiner recliner for the fucking win. just stupid. The whole thing's a waste of time. Sullivan tries to come back in, and he gets forced back without being blatantly obvious. This is my favorite part. Did you notice this? So he runs to the back, and security, he's like directing security what to do. And they're
security
lost.
Security in quotation marks.
Right.
Because it was literally like Doug Dillinger and another fat dude that looked scared for his life apparently have enough force to send Sullivan back to ringside.
But it's great because Sullivan, he's like, he's standing in front of Dillinger and they're talking. And then he looks to the left and he's like talking. He's telling the guy to come over and block him. And then he's just standing there the whole time. And he's just like pointing, like, come over here, come over here. And the camera's staying on him. So
I did not get that. So he audibly calls the guy over to restrain him.
Yeah, you gotta watch it. He's like, he's clearly telling him, like, come over here. He's like talking off screen. And like, he's not yelling, he's just talking. And he's like talking to Dillinger. And then he kind of does the thing where, like, he backs himself up, and then the fucking guys finally come over and force him. It's real awkward. excuse me. So Sullivan gets, I'm done, but Super Troopers is one scene where I lost it, and I was doing the most annoying laugh cough of all time in the fucking theater.
In the theater.
Oh, I was losing it. So Sullivan gets beaten on by Hogan for a while. The Dungeon of Doom heads off. We'll get to the next part in a second, but you got to go back and watch that. Because it goes down for like an awkward like 2 minutes, too. Like, Sullivan is just standing there talking to them. And you can tell he's saying, like, come over here, like, push me back. It's just, he's directing traffic. It's so bad. Oh, fuck. All of this was terrible.
That is bad.
So what did you go? I went 2.25 just because, like, it's probably way too high, but I felt bad going much lower because I feel like there's, like, some decent spots in here. And, like, Savage and Sting work hard. And, like, Ming was fine. And even Shark, like, he's working hard in there. So, like, a baseline War Games to me is like a baseline Rumble, right? Like, I'm only going to go so low because there's enough to keep it interesting. You get the time limits. I thought Bobby was good. So, whatever. I mean, it's probably a tick high, but I feel like there's enough of a baseline in the gimmick to at least keep it around there.
Yeah, I did too. I agree kind of that's the baseline. Yeah, I did think, like, it's kind of a shame Savage wasn't in more War Games.
Yeah,
because like his little energy in a confined space like that was a lot of fun. When he came in, he was flying around.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, I think War Games for Sting is a great vehicle too. So it seems like it would be for Savage as well.
Yeah, I agree. So Giant comes out and they're playing him up as Andre's son. I mean, like, Bobby's basically fucking saying it. I remember those tights.
Yeah.
And he chokes out Hogan.
Well, I've had a fabricated birth certificate saying he was
She had Trump
Paul,
with the Trump
Paul
with the Trump with the birth certificate.
Yes.
So Giant chokes out Hogan and wrenches his neck. And I thought that segment kind of saved things too. Like, I didn't mind that attack. I thought it was pretty good.
No. Yeah.
But Bobby's, yeah, it's ridiculous that they're basically saying it's Andre's son. I mean, it's so stupid. Yeah. I don't know why they bothered going that route. It's...
Bobby's the original birther. I mean, I did think this, like, gave some, at least some validity to the heels and made them look kind of evil and threatening. Because you don't see Hogan laid out like that and much for a pay-per-view. And the Giant, when he got into the cage, you notice he, like, dives kind of over the top rope, like, shows some agility. I thought that was impressive as well.
Yeah, and I think he was trying to show off that he's, like, the new age Giant. Like, I think that was kind of the goal. Like, he's Andre, but improved because he's got the mobility and, you know, he can fly around and stuff. Like, I think they make that a point early on with him.
So, I mean, that kind of ends the pay-per-view with gloom and doom for Hulkamania.
Yeah. Too bad. So, like you said, though, this was kind of the end, right, of the red and yellow Hulk, because the Dark Hulk takes hold pretty quick after
Right. So we really only get that first night of the head-to-head battle where it's straight up, you know, Mr. Kenny.
Are you straight up? Or are you with Sting and Luger, brother?
When I look Lex right in the eye, he said that in the promo. It's like, what do you mean?
I can tell in his eye. All right.
So overall, I mean, this pay-per-view is kind of up and down. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had one great match, one near there, and then a lot of stuff I really didn't like. So it's a pretty inconsistent pay-per-view in my mind. But the
best part of that inconsistency to me, and it'll bear out in my grade, is when you add up the two good matches, it's almost an hour, right? So, you know, the show was not even three. So
yeah,
a chunk of the show. Right. So an hour of the 240 is like great. You know what I mean? So to me, I usually weight that in, you know, so.
All right. Let's get to our awards.
Get your rewards, Monday Night War rewards card out to punch in your awards here. All right. So match of the night, even though I gave it both the same grade, I still went Flair and Arn.
I agree with that.
Okay. Segment of the night, and we've been kind of squishy on this. We haven't really declared if, like, a match could be a segment, too, or if it had to be something not a match. So I went with the finish of Flair versus Arn, which I liked a lot because it puts Pillman over. How are you looking at that as a category? Are you going to allow yourself to include matches there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that works because, I kind of look at that as anything that's really, like, story meant development.
Right. Okay. That's a good way to look at it.
And stuff like that. So, I mean, that certainly qualifies. I mean, I went with the Flair Arn video package and then Arn's promo and kind of tied in just the wrestlers around ringside, you know, to kind of throw in all that to give the ambiance for the match. So that was mine. But yeah, I mean, that was a good choice on your behalf, too.
All right. So, my MVP of the night, I went with Brian Pillman. I thought he was great in the opener, and I loved him at the finish of the match. I just thought it was like the biggest night he could have possibly had for where he was in his career. So to me, you know, he stood out. He arguably was part of the best match of the night, and is probably the biggest storyline point of the night too, depending on where you fall on Giant killing Hogan. But so I thought it was his night in a way. So I gave it to him.
That's another good choice. Somebody I debated. I ended up going with Flair. And that kind of talks about what I said before. I mean, I just felt like, I don't know, just watching him tonight, I didn't see much difference from like 87 Flair to this Flair. And I think that's pretty incredible because I was thinking like, if you think of Flair's peak, like we said, from 82, 83 to this, that's a 12-year run. I mean, that's like Cena from 2005 to 2017. But beyond those two, I don't know of anybody in the U.S. wrestling scene that has had that many highs, you know, that far apart, that's been able to kind of keep it up at that level.
Right.
So I think that's a real testament to him. So I thought this was kind of one of his better nights in 95, so I did go with Flair.
Yeah, no, good choice. Both, I think those two stood out as the most on the evening, and, you know, Arn probably in them bad, too. So, all right, so for the best commentary line of the night, I did enjoy the Thug one because it was ridiculous, but I went with two others here that I identified. One is Tony talking about DDP and Kimberly. Remember high school when all the good-looking girls went out with all the dirtbags? That made me laugh for some reason. In relation to Kimberly, and it also gives you some insight into Tony. And then I liked Bobby when Hogan brought out the powder. It smells like napalm or gunpowder. Like, it was so fucking absurd. That made me laugh. So those are my two favorites, along with the "they're not thugs" that Bobby said about Harlem Heat.
I didn't catch the thugs one live. I did. My pick is the napalm one. Just because, yeah, that was so absurd and over the top that you could tell, like, you know, Bobby was trashing the match to a degree. Like, it was just, you know, the way he phrases it, he's like, "Do you smell that? Oh, it smells, what is that? That smells like napalm." Like, I don't know, do you think he would know what napalm smells like?
No, maybe he went through, like, a training camp, boot camp. Maybe Craig Pittman put him through a boot camp on the...
Like, if I stepped outside right now and napalm was in the area, I don't think I'd recognize that scent myself with no military combat experience. But I guess Bobby does.
Yeah, he knows, and he can smell it. He's got the best nose ever in wrestling history because he always smells it and immediately knows.
Chloroform from Giant Gonzalez.
He knows. Oh, that was a good match. Yeah. All right, so... did you pick up any shots fired on this evening? I didn't. I mean, no Eric there, so it was a less of a chance.
No, yeah, and it was, I mean, it was really good. Like, you had some of the stuff, like, you know, they really didn't even mention Nitro that much. I mean, they did some, like, say, you know, and tomorrow night it's live, you know, basic. But I didn't really think they hammered it home that, oh, our main show's on Monday night now, and hey, wink, gets up against the other company, too.
Right.
So, no, not a lot of that. It was pretty much on point with the pay-per-view here.
Yeah, it does feel a little outside the wars in a way. So,
right.
We didn't have any debuts either, and no dropped angles just yet. We'll see when the Andre's son gets dropped. I'm sure it's fairly quick.
All right, we'll have to track when Sherry and Parker end up getting dropped too. I mean, I know that's down the road, but we'll see.
It definitely continues at least the next night. I know that. So, all right. Final grade. I went 6 out of 10. I feel like there's enough here to like. The two big matches are real, real good. There's some good storyline stuff. There is a lot of dreck, but Bobby and Tony were so on point that only that tag title match really dragged for me. And the main event's got enough campiness to at least carry it, like, a tiny bit. So, 6 felt right. Like, I didn't want to bury it, and I thought it was a little bit better in the middle of the road, so.
Yeah, I can go with that. I'll go 6 out of 10 as well. I agree with that. I mean, like you said, the two big stuff took up a big majority of the pay-per-view. And then if you throw on the end, which, like you said, I mean, it's definitely campy, but it's something you probably should watch once just to see. I mean, that's almost 3/4 of the show, really. I mean, the only other matches you have is that terrible tag match, a pretty quick Renegade match, and then the squash. So it moved along. I mean, this was a show I watched in two settings, and if the tag match hadn't have been as awful as it was, I probably could have watched it in one.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. All right, that'll do it.
That is it.
Fun way to look at Fall Brawl. All right, so our next episode will be back to Monday night. And we will have Raw and Nitro from 9/18/95. So that'll be our next episode. And then we're right back to pay-per-view after that with In Your House 3. So those are our next two to come up. 9/18's got some interesting stuff, Chad. So be curious what you think about those episodes. But we'll be back at some point. No set date or time, but hopefully we'll keep coming at you pretty regularly because it's a lot of fun, and we appreciate the feedback. Speaking of which, we're going to set up some dedicated threads, probably at PWO and maybe one on Facebook. To share your thoughts on these shows, and we'll read them on the episodes as well. Depends, Chad, how you want to do it. If you want to do it as a look back or as a one that we're talking about, like, will we request feedback on Fall Brawl or on those 9/18 shows? You know, we can discuss that. So,
yeah, I would think it'd be the show we talk about just that so night, we can bounce off any. Yeah, that night.
Okay.
So we can bounce off any points.
So we'll look for your feedback on the 9/18 shows for our next episode. We'll put up some posts on that. All right, any final thoughts for you?
Nope, I've enjoyed myself, and now I actually do have to go back to shoot job work, so there you go.
Fuck shit junk. Have fun with that. All right, so we're out. Everyone, check out all the other shows, PlayStation.com, PlayStation.com/Amazon. Shop with us. And, of course, if you want in on the GWWE Tag Team Project, let us know as well. That's just really getting underway in earnest, so it's not too late, obviously, at all to get into the conversation there. So, all right, that's Chad. I'm JT. We're out. You've been Ward. Is that good? I don't know. You're dismissed. Nothing.
Smells like napalm.